This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, now 26 minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back, everybody. You know, I was talking to my wife this morning. I said, you know, football's about to begin again. Yeah, Thursday night football, right? Think about how much football we have. We basically have football all week long, but then you get 2 days off from it. You're probably saying, what are you talking about? But you got Thursday night football, right? You got the NFL. Friday night lights. You got all, you know, in the Midwest, apparently, in a lot of areas around the nation, people love to watch, you know, high school football. Saturday, of course, you've got college football. And then Sunday and Monday, you've got the NFL again. So I guess the football weekend is Tuesday and Wednesday. Those are the only 2 days that you're really not going to watch a whole lot of football. The NFL's been making a lot of news. You know, everything from Adrian Peterson to Ray Rice. Monday night, they made news again. In the last Monday night football game. Kansas City Chiefs, I don't know if you saw the game or not. They said about ripping the New England Patriots to shreds. I was surprised. I didn't think the game would be like that. But one of the players for the Chiefs, Hussein Abdullah is the guy's name. He intercepted a pass from Brady, and he sprinted down into the end zone. And when he got there, he did what a lot of other players do. He basically made a religious gesture of prayer. Now, of course, Abdullah is a Muslim, and apparently the referee thought that what he did was too much, and they actually penalized him 15 yards, I guess for an act of celebration or something along those lines. I forget what the exact title of the penalty was. But I actually saw this video clip. I thought he caught the pass, he went to his knees, and then he got back up again. I didn't think it was taunting or any sort of overt display. He was simply, I think, a religious gesture on his part. And it made me think of Tim Tebow, right? Tebow, of course, he'd get down on one knee and put his hand to his fist, you know, his fist to his forehead, and he would clearly pray. The following day after this penalty, everybody was talking about it. Should he have been penalized? You know, they, of course, they pummeled the Patriots. I think the final score of that game was 41-14. The following day, the NFL said that the official should not have given him that 15-yard penalty. And a lot of people made the comparison to Tim Tebow for never being penalized. Joining me today to talk about this and a lot of other issues coming up also, I'm going to talk about the Redskins. You may not be able to use that name anymore. You know, broadcasters may be fined. Wait till I tell you what the FCC is doing. Some interesting stuff. But it's a delight to welcome back to the program Dr. Bill Thierfelder. He's the president of Belmont Abbey College. Check them out. Great Catholic liberal arts college, and he just stepped away from a board meeting to join me. He's the author of a great book called Less Than a Minute to Go, The Secret to World-Class Performance in Sports, Business, and Everyday Life. And he's got a rich history in sports. He was an NCAA Division I coach, and an Olympian, a two-time All-American from the University of Maryland, amongst others. Doctor, welcome back. Good afternoon.
Hey, Drew. It's so good to be with you.
It was great. I don't know if you watched Monday Night Football, if you caught that game or not.
Did you
see the gesture? I mean, I wasn't upset or thought it was too much, but when I saw the controversy over it later, I thought, well, maybe that's just the NFL rule and nobody can pray anymore. I don't know. Give me your thoughts
well,
of what no, you saw.
What, it gets into another issue that's not really related to a religious liberty one. It's that there's an actual rule that states players are prohibited from engaging in any kind of celebrations or demonstrations while on the ground, and that was made a rule so that you wouldn't get this what they call excessive celebration right. in the end zone. I would start by saying with the excessive celebration thing, why are you going to keep somebody's joy down? I mean, what's the big deal? I mean, but maybe they could create like the 10-second rule.
Like
you know,
that.
You can go nuts. The whole team can roll in the end zone if they want, you know,
I
for
10
it. Seconds. It doesn't go more than that. Otherwise, you get penalized. But, you know, as long as they're not doing anything lewd or obscene or something, why not let guys be happy and I mean, don't be in somebody's face. That would be taunting. I understand not to do that. But why not let people celebrate the way they want to celebrate? And to your point, I mean, the commissioner came back apparently, and basically said, this was, I guess, the vice president of football communications came back and said that the flag shouldn't have been thrown. You know, he went down for religious reasons. Mm-hmm. It's now okay. So I assume that'll happen. My understanding in the NFL is I think there's only maybe six or so players who are Muslim that are playing, and I believe almost all of them play defense. So it's rare they're going to get in the end zone to maybe do that.
Right.
But Sure, it was a religious.
It was the first time I ever saw that, though. I never saw, you know, that Muslim form of prayer. I mean, there used to be all sorts of praying, you know, cornerbacks and wide receivers and things along those lines. But
well, you're right. But I don't know if there's ever been a Muslim before playing in the NFL that we've ever seen score. You know, and obviously, you know, the in the Muslim tradition in prayer, mm-hmm. they kneel down. You know. Facing Mecca, and so they kneel down, touch the head to the ground, and I think that was what he was mimicking in his action of sliding to the ground with his head down. Obviously, the official had never seen this before, and he thought there was something else going on, which, in fact, it really wasn't. But again, it gets back to the whole excessive celebration thing. Yeah. What is wrong with a whole bunch of guys being excited and being able to congratulate the lot? I always believe, by the way, that, you know, as part of sportsmanship and virtue, the guy who scored didn't get there by himself. I mean, he got there because he had linemen, he had other people, quarterback, whoever, helping him to get to that end zone. And so to me, it only seems fair that everybody should share in that. You know, I never like in soccer when the guy who scores runs away from his teammates, you know, to slide towards the stands. It's like, hey, you didn't get there by yourself. You got there because you had a team. And to me, you should all celebrate together.
That's such a great point. And I think you're right. I don't agree with taunting, you know, spinning the ball in front of the wide receiver, you know, the defensive player you just beat, or any sort of excessive celebration. A lot of times these athletes would do dances and choreograph things in the end zone.
Right.
And maybe that's excessive. But honestly, your strategy is great. Maybe 5 seconds, maybe 10 seconds,
right.
where everybody can jump up and down and celebrate. They just scored a touchdown,
They can pile on each other, you know? Who cares?
That is so funny. You're right. I never even thought of that. That's such a brilliant observation, you know, because it does take the joy. You score this touchdown, you well up with this emotion. You want to rejoice.
Well, let me tell you this. I've worked with a lot of pro football players before, and one of the things that they have the hardest time with is that it stops being a game, and it really becomes work, and it becomes a certain drudgery sometimes to these guys. And I've always said to them, you got to play like you're the 12-year-old in the backyard. You know, you got to go out there and just have fun. And like when you score, remember, like you'd roll around, you'd jump up and down. I mean, people would jump on top of you. You know, that's what brings a certain joy, and I think it would bring joy to everybody watching it.
Now, the NFL, as we pointed out, they changed. They made a comment about that the following day. Did the NFL realize that they hadn't come out with, if they didn't come out with that statement, that this would have been trouble for them? Why do you think they reversed it?
Well, again, I think it's interesting to me, you know, from a Christian standpoint. Usually you'll get more criticism for doing a Christian, you know, move. Not that you'll get a penalty for it, but I mean, you're always being criticized by commentators and anybody else if you show any sign of, you know, your Christian faith. But everybody's so, you know, politically sensitive, you know, so if you bring up something that's about Muslim, oh gosh, well, we got to make sure that all the Muslims are covered and so forth. Well, sure. I mean, anybody's faith should be, you know, recognized and allowed to express their religious belief in whatever way they choose is appropriate, as long as it's within the, you know, confines of the game. But I think, again, because it's Muslim and we have such issues with that in this country and, you know, given the wars and everything else that we've had, I just think it's a sensitive issue. And, you know, it harkens back to the whole thing down in New York City where they wanted to put the Muslim mosque, you know, basically right down the block from the World Trade Center. It's sort of like in your face kind of thing. And, you know, you can understand both sides of the argument, but gosh, it's not very sensitive. Let's just say that.
No, I agree with you. You know, speaking of Tebow, who made it famous, you know, getting down there and praying, he was that praying quarterback. I had heard, and again, I don't know whether this is true or not. I don't have the report in front of me, but there was almost a prejudice against him because of his faith. And I don't know whether that's true or not. They were looking at stats, his stats compared to some of the NFL quarterbacks right now. And this guy can't land a job on any team at all. And I just wonder, is there a prejudice against faith in the NFL? I don't know.
With Tebow, I would say,
or is there a prejudice against him?
I think it's more the style of play. Obviously, he's a talented guy, very athletic, you know, can run with the ball and so forth. But he's not a natural fit in many schemes, and so I think that's part of the challenge is to find a place for him. So that I could go with that.
Yeah.
I do think there was, though, some real bias against him where it's almost like people were looking to find fault in him somehow so they could say, look what a hypocrite he is, you know, because he kneeled down or he said a prayer or something, now we found something he did, you know, not right, and so we could show that was really not true. Why are you going to such work to disprove somebody's faith? You know, I mean, nobody's perfect. Nobody's claiming to be perfect. All he's doing is acknowledging before God that he's been blessed as a steward of the skills, talents, and abilities he has, the Matthew 25:14-30, you know, parable of talents. And that's all he's doing. He's acknowledging that. And what the heck's wrong with that? As a matter of fact, not forget what's wrong with it. That's actually a good thing.
Hey, my guest today is Dr. Bill Thierfelder, president of Belmont Abbey, of course, NCAA Division I coach, a noted author. He wrote a book called Less Than a Minute to Go. You may want to check that out. We're talking a little bit about what's going on in the NFL, but you want to follow up on what you just said, because I'm always perplexed by that. Tebow, of course, a prayerful guy, volunteered. He claimed to be a virgin, and for some reason, people, you're right, wanted to see this guy come down. What is it about human nature that when we see people who are virtuous and just and have a relationship with God, what is it about the culture that just wants to see somebody that's at the top come down?
Well, it's a very unfortunate thing. I think we can all tend towards it, you know, if we're not careful, and that, you know, we always want to put down why somebody else really isn't as good as they really are. And I learned early in my life, you know, I used to have that kind of feeling about, let's say, people that were in my profession, you know, and I see them do something, you know, they'd be successful or rewarded for something, and I'd be like, oh, that guy's not that good, or he didn't do this, that. And I came to recognize, you know what, God bless him, I'm happy for him, I'm glad he got that. That has nothing to do with me, and has nothing to do with me working hard to do the things that I think I should be doing and doing to the best of my ability. But I think that takes a certain, you know, probably maturity. Some maybe get it sooner than others, and obviously a grace as well that, you know, God gave me, hopefully, to be able to appreciate and be happy for other people. I mean, one thing I see in our family, I have a very big family, I have 10 children, and one of the greatest joys I get from my children is that they love each other so much that they are the first to praise what somebody else does. So if the guys are playing football out in the yard and a guy makes a great catch, when they come in, it's the other guys that are the first to tell me, you know, oh, you should have seen the catch Luke made out there, you know. It just brings me joy. They're so happy for the success of their brother or their sister, and I think that's really what we should be doing in life. You know, we should be looking for the good in people, and when they accomplish something good, we should acknowledge it. I mean, that doesn't mean they're perfect. It doesn't mean something else maybe doesn't have to change, but appreciate the good thing that they did.
All right. My guest today, Dr. Bill Thierfelder, if you want to join us, I'll open the phones. Feel free to dial in. Our toll-free number here, 877-ROME, 777-877-ROME, 777. Got to take a short break, Doc, but when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the FCC. They voted down the blackout rule, and want to talk to you about that. And also, this is an interesting one. They're weighing in on this whole controversy over the team name, the Washington Redskins, and we've talked about this in the past, but what the FCC is contemplating is whether or not if a broadcaster uses the name Redskin on air, whether or not he'll be fined. And this is a proposal, not a final rule, but it certainly sounds somewhat draconian. But we can take a look at the name Redskins and much, much more. Again, we'll take your calls. Feel free to dial in. 877-ROME, 777, taking a look at some of the latest NFL news and more right after this.
I've long loved this story told to me by someone who had gone to a concert by the great Polish piano player Ignacy Paderewski. And she brought her kid and was with a friend. And while they were talking, her child had slipped away. And when the lights dimmed and the curtain started open, she looked around to see where he was. Well, he had somehow snuck onto stage and was sitting at the piano bench. And as Paderewski came out to take his bow in the spotlight, he looked over and saw the kid who was sitting at the piano bench plucking out Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star with one finger. Paderewski slipped up behind him, whispered, "Keep playing," and then he reached around him with both hands and improvised this wonderful, rich accompaniment. And you and I are the one-fingered piano player. We do what bit we can, and God, the master musician, fills in around that to make something good of our simple efforts.
This is Relevant Radio.
How could I possibly be expected to handle school on a day like this?
Whether or not you homeschool your children, an interesting take on how those kids fit in socially with their peers. We have new information from Catholic blogger and mom Marge Fenlon. Then in this month of the Rosary, Father Bob Pagliari will take us through the Servite Rosary, otherwise known as the Seven Sorrows Rosary, in this cherished prayer and special mission. We'll have the day's gospel reading and take your calls on tomorrow's First Friday edition of Morning Air.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on the cutting edge of faith and life.
All right, 12 minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back, everyone. I'm joined today by author Dr. Bill Thierfelder. He wrote a book called Less Than a Minute to Go, The Secret to World-Class Performance in Sports, Business, and Everyday Life. You can check that book out at lessthanaminutetogo.com. Great website or any major bookstore. Former NCAA Division I coach and an Olympian, two-time All-American for the University of Maryland, and, of course, now the president of Belmont Abbey College, taking a look at the world of sports, in particular the NFL. And there's a lot of news coming out of the NFL over the past few weeks since the start of the season. And, Doc, I want to pick it up on this issue of the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission. They voted down a blackout rule, and that's something that's been in place for a long time. And I remember during last year's playoffs games, the Packers had a position in it, and they didn't sell out all their tickets for a particular game, or maybe it was another team. But the banks came in, the local community came in. I think it was Green Bay because it was so cold. I don't think people were going to go to the game. But in the end, they got sold out, and the rule basically says that if a game doesn't have X amount of seats sold, then the local TV station's not able to air the game. So all those in the local community wouldn't be able to see it. And that rule's been in place so that people, you know, didn't just say, I'm going to stay home. I'll just watch it on TV. And because they knew they wouldn't get as much money that way. But the rule is, but now that the rule's gone, the NFL isn't very happy. Why did the FCC get rid of that particular rule? And how do you think it's going to impact, stadiums and ticket sales?
Well, I'd start off by saying I think the NFL must have a bullseye on its back right now, and justly so for many of the things. But the point is, it just seems maybe the NFL has drawn so much attention to itself in some negative ways that you now have people, you know, literally on the football term, they're piling on. You know, so this is going in, and I know you want to probably talk about it at some point, but the FCC, the same person. This is the thing about the whole Redskins thing too. So they're kind of piling on in a number of different ways. I think the bottom line to this is that, to your point, they're doing this. They want to have people in the stands. They don't want to show a game where there's not people in the stands, because it would show that maybe it's not popular, it's not good in some ways. And obviously, they make a lot of their money from concessions at these games and so forth. And if you don't have people in the stands, you're obviously not selling a lot. But here's the point. Do you think the NFL is going to be the one who suffers from this?
I mean,
whatever way they come up with doing this, the NFL is going to figure out how to make money out of it, and then the bottom line is we, the fans, are going to pay more for this one way or the other. So if it's not directly in being in the seats in the stands, then it's going to end up being, they're going to have higher ad fees, or the network fees will be higher, or whatever it might
be. Higher ticket fees,
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is I think it's interesting, and I don't have any facts on this or not, but one thing I see even in just higher education, people are moving more and more towards a virtual way of thinking about things. And the one thing I've said about sports at college, as an example, here at like Belmont Abbey, is that you can't virtualize sports. You know, if you want to participate in sports, you got to actually be here and you got to actually do it. And I'm wondering to some degree if, that's part of the issue, is that people maybe would rather just watch and really not do the action, not actually take the effort to go out to the game and to participate in that way. However, having said that, I think last year there were only two games that were blacked out. So, again, most places are probably selling out, but I also know that teams will buy tickets. So if they have 5,000 extra tickets, the team will buy the 5,000 extra tickets just to get it on TV, because it's worth it to them to be on TV.
That's true. And it was goodwill. I think a local bank in the Green Bay community bought those tickets, and they ended up giving them out. I think it was Associate Bank or something along those lines. The thing I find interesting, and I was sharing with you during the last break, I saw a news report this morning that I think it's either DirecTV. I think it is Direct, not Dish. Dish or Direct, one of them, who has the NFL package. And it costs you a couple $100, I think, to have that package. And you can watch all the NFL games you want if you have that that Dish TV. You know, you get to watch it, whether it's blacked out or not, and whether they're in your local community or not. Because if you have your regular TV, you get one or two games at 1 o'clock, maybe one or two at 4. But the NFL is going to generate $12 billion over 10 years. That's $1.2 billion from DirecTV. There is so much money to be made in the NFL. What is it about the NFL that people are willing to spend so much money? And what is it that, you know, you take a look at the Super Bowl, too. Record numbers of people watch that. And, of course, a 30-second commercial, the last Super Bowl was $4 million. So for 30 seconds, it's a lot of money. What is it about the NFL that has captured, America?
Well, I think the NFL has done a great job of packaging themselves, you know, and creating the whole aura and culture of professional football in this country. And although baseball was always America's sport, right now NFL is on top in terms of certainly revenues. Mm-hmm. And then the $12 billion you're talking about is only a drop in the bucket, by the way, because that's only for the DirecTV or
right.
the Dish kind of network
right.
type of thing, where they do the NFL packages, never mind the other, you know, dollars that are out there that they're generating from it.
Amazing.
So it's something that, you know, we're the consumers, so we're the ones who say we love it this much. We like it so much, we're willing to pay you whatever we got to pay you, whenever you got to pay for it. And you know, and I have to tell you honestly, I have the Direct, and the reason I had it is when I worked with NFL players, mm-hmm. I could see every one of them play because I could get all the games and I could record them, and then I can go back and look at them and see how they perform. Now, I bet the average person's not doing it for that reason. But there is something great about being able to watch any NFL game you want from any place, anywhere, at any time. I mean, it's pretty good.
That's right. I forgot about that. You are not only a psychologist, but you're also a member of the American College of Sports Medicine and the United States Olympic Committee on Sports Psychology, right?
Well, I'm off the registry, but yes, I was on all those. And but basically, I worked with professional football players, you know, on a year-round basis. And again, I would be able to watch them actually
awesome.
Play, and then we could talk about those things afterwards.
So do you still have all the games?
I do.
Good for you.
Well, actually, I ended up working. Another player approached me, Andre Williams, who's playing for the Giants right now.
Yeah.
He was a fourth-round pick last year, and I've tried to help him a little bit, yeah. working on his receiving skills before the combine and then yeah. a little bit after that. So so it's nice to be able to watch him play and just see how yeah. things are going. And but anyway, so
here's my theory. Here's my theory, Doc, on why the NFL is so huge, why we have it 5 days out of seven, or not the NFL, but football in general. I do believe in some respects, if you look at the fantasy leagues and you look at the NFL, I think there's a lot of gambling that goes down on it. People, they're in suicide pools, they're in pick fives, they are in, you know, all sorts of different things. And I think sometimes when you've got a vested interest in it like that, sometimes makes people want to watch, especially if you're in, what's the office pool that takes place? Fantasy football.
Yeah.
You know, because you can watch every game, you can root against every game. So, if there is a gambling component, what do you think that does? And how big is that?
Gambling is huge. And by the way, it's huge across the board for any sport. So sometimes even when you just talk about the popularity of sport in the world, mm-hmm. Gambling is a big, big part of it in terms of the amount of dollars that are generated. Billions of dollars are generated in gambling in all sports. It could be the chicken and the egg here. You know, you could say,
uh-huh.
well, football is the most popular, so you're going to get more gambling and more interest in it maybe for that reason as well. It's also a more discreet season. You know, you got your 18 games or roughly, you know,
yeah.
whatever you might be looking at. But I think the NFL's just done a good job of packaging it, creating mm-hmm. loyalty. You can see the big push they've made in recent years is to get women more involved, because I think in the past there were fewer women watching the NFL. Obviously, you probably have just about every male in the United States watching mm-hmm. the NFL. And so, you know, they tried to do things to show that they're, you know, women friendly, that they want women to be involved in the NFL. So they have women reporters on the sideline. Obviously, the cancer, you know, awareness,
yeah.
the pink, you
yeah.
know, play and so forth. I mean, all of those things are being done to try to, in a sense, expand their base. I mean, this is a purely, you know, monetary thing here. They're saying we've already maxed out our marketplace probably unless we get
right.
as many women to watch as we do have men watch the, you know, the game. So it's about money. Bottom line to professional sport,
right.
it's a business as much as we glorify it with all other kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
It's about money and making money.
Darn right. Let me go to the phones. We only have a few moments left. We'll go to Sharon in Chicago. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. As you're talking about the mega bucks that the NFL is making, which, you know, gets to be obscene numbers, and the way they manipulate things, et cetera, we have to remember that the National Football League is considered a not-for-profit.
Yeah, how do they get away with that? How can the NFL, which is making billions of dollars in TV contracts and everything else, merchandise, how do they get away with being considered a nonprofit, Doc?
I don't
know.
You're...
That's what I'd like. Instead of the IRS going after real not-for-profits and the Catholic Church,
that's true.
Why don't they just
you're good
NFL on the shoulder?
I like that. Hey,
well,
Sharon,
you're good. You're good. I like your thought process.
Wow.
I think again the NFL. One thing I will say about making money, people say they make too much money. They generate this and that. The point is, we're paying it.
Yep.
In other words, the NFL doesn't get money from some other source. It gets it from every one of us,
yeah,
and
right.
it just accumulates up to these obscene numbers. But we're the ones that create those numbers. If we weren't willing to pay for it, it wouldn't be this industry. We wouldn't even be talking about it.
Hey, I only have less than 2 minutes. I want to get thoughts on the FCC now weighing in this whole controversy over the team name, the Washington Redskins. The owner, of course, is under tremendous pressure right now from all corners to change the name because people claim it's racist. The FCC could weigh in and say, hey, if a broadcaster uses the name Redskins on the air, we're going to fine you. Now, it's a proposal, not a final rule. This story does not go away. We've looked at it from a number of different angles. It sounds, as I said a little bit earlier, kind of draconian. What's your thought on that? Now the FCC chiming in on the name the Redskins.
Well, I have two thoughts about it. I mean, one, we've talked about it before, which is the name Redskin was not always a negative, you know, word. It wasn't used that way. I mean, white skins were used, redskins were used, you know, all kinds of color skin was used, and it wasn't a negative term. It was later on in the beginning, I guess, of the 19th century, for a period of time, it was a very negative term. So you get into, is it right? Is it offensive to people? Is it, you know, if enough people think it's offensive, is that reasons to change it? The second thing here, though, is the FCC does nothing about pornography, sexually explicit images, and foul language. So I'd like them to rule those things out then, too, if they're going to get rid of the Redskins.
Very well said. Well, Doctor, first of all, thank you for your time. I always enjoy your conversations. I wish I had more time with you. The book, by the way, less than a minute to go. Where can people get that?
Amazon.com is the easiest.
All right, best place. Check it out. Also, check out Belmont Abbey College. Dr. Thierfelder's president there. I'm Drew Mariani. Have a good night, everyone.